Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Has anyone ever seen Jeff Blair and Bob McCowan in the same room? Is it possible they're actually the same person? Jeff Blair, guest host for Bob McCowan. This is Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is Arash Madani's favorite song of all time. Oh, wait a minute. It's my favorite song of all time. It's Primetime Sports for Monday, August 31st. An hour away from first pitch at the Rogers Center, Jays, Cleveland Indians. First of three on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet East Ontario, West, and Pacific.
I have to tell you, we've been sitting here, and I've been a little distracted watching this Eugenie Bouchard-Allison risk match. This might be some of the best tennis, and I know you don't care, that Bouchard has played in months. Right. Nah, she's been impressive. She's been impressive. And for somebody who's been so bad since January, good for her. Good for her. She's up a set, their own serve in the second.
Straight out of Westmount. Our Jeannie. Straight out of Westmount. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet joins us. Straight out of...
He's closer to Westmount than you and I are right now.
Indeed he is. One of my favorite places on the planet, but I'm not going to say where that is. Mr. Davidi, thank you for this.
You got it. What's going on, gentlemen?
Oh, not much. You know, new president, things of that nature.
Ho-hum.
Shai and I spoke this morning, I said, hey, man, you're taking a couple days off. Turn off your brain and turn off your phone. And you've done neither, brother. What's going on?
I feel like Al Pacino, Godfather 3. I keep trying to get out.
Back in. Slave to the grind, my friend. Slave to the grind.
It's true.
Well, all right. Mark Shapiro is the president of the team. I mean, we walked through a bunch of names when this process started. And, I mean, we've talked about this on and off at the ballpark and everything. Now that the deal's done, does Mark Shapiro's hiring make sense to you?
I totally get it. I understand why they were interested in him, and I understand why they wanted to get it done now. I mean, if you're thinking about how you're going to position this team in the longer term, you want, in the ideal scenario, you want a guy with a lot of baseball experience, but who also is very savvy on the business side. And Mark Shapiro, has basically checks all the boxes that you'd want. You know, he's got experience overseeing a major stadium renovation. He's got experience revamping branding and overall franchise strategy and direction. He's got experience revamping the customer service experience. So he brings all these things to the table. Plus, I mean, he's an accomplished baseball guy. So I think from that perspective, it certainly makes sense. And then you factor in that you don't want this elephant in the room hanging around when you have your first high-stakes September since 1993.
Right.
So now you've got this in place. Some bigger picture planning can take place in the background all while this plays out. And I think for those two reasons, it's a pretty good move.
Shai, you've been all over this story from the beginning. How much of Mark Shapiro's background with that stadium renovation and the stadium refit or whatever you want to call it in Cleveland had to do with this move?
I think it's a significant factor, but it's not just that alone. I mean, that helps, you know, the fact, you know, I got the sense that he might have been looking for, you know, a bit of a different challenge. He'd been in Cleveland 24 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's and this is a bigger market and a bit of a bigger challenge. Obviously, he's going to be working with a bigger budget, so there's bigger opportunity. And he's got a chance to really put his stamp on the franchise here with how he pushes things forward. So I think when you factor those two things together, I mean, it's a pretty good match because you have a team that, you know, need someone who can talk to the Rogers communication side and make sense to them and then take their directions and then have it make sense to the baseball side. And I think that's part of the attraction to him as well.
In conversation with Shai Davidi on Primetime Sports,
you know, the thing that I, as I sit here and you know, spent the day trying to make sense of this hiring, obviously the question that we kind of keep getting back to is whether or not Alex and Mark Shapiro can coexist. Now, I was told at one point that that Alex has used Mark at times as somebody he could bounce ideas off of. I've also been told subsequent to that and today and in your piece in particular that they really, if there has been dialogue, it's almost been like passing ships. That there's certainly not a mentorship type of a relationship or anything like that with those two. But you know Alex pretty well. Do you think Alex could get along with Mark Shapiro, even if there wasn't an ironclad, clear delineation of responsibilities? In other words, I think if this thing was structured so that Alex had total say over baseball operations, the point would be moot. But what if Mark wants to have some say in things? Do you think Alex and he could coexist in this?
That's a great question. And here's what I don't know, is that whether from a philosophical side on the baseball end of things, how closely or how similar they are. That I'm not certain. But what I can say is that Shapiro is going to be smart enough to recognize that there's something good going on here, mm-hmm. and that he probably doesn't need to mess with it very much. And that if, judging by the way he ran the Cleveland Indians, where Chris Antonetti had basically autonomy to do as he saw fit, and you know, from what I've heard, there were instances where there are some moves that Antonetti made that Shapiro didn't necessarily agree with, but he still green-lighted them because that was his guy making his call and he didn't want to usurp him of that authority. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, if it operates like that here, I don't foresee that being an issue. I think in general, if Alex Anthopoulos understands what the president wants of him, the way that he has with Beeston for all these years, that he has a clear understanding of exactly his role and his responsibilities, and that he's not basically bumped down to an AGM or something like that, then I don't see why this would be problematic.
Hey, Shai, by the way, Austin Jackson, we're told, has just been traded to the Cubs from the Mariners. It is, of course, August 31st. Rosters are getting set to expand. We have been told, or several people in the States have reported, that the Yankees blocked David Robertson, thinking that he might be going to the Jays. Are you expecting, this is just to kind of go away from the whole Shapiro-Alex thing yet, but are you expecting to see some sort of other move made by Alex?
If there was an opportunity, I still think he'd love to get an extra outfielder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure he's going to be able to pull that off at this point. You know, he's tried various things. They haven't worked out so far. My guess that if they do something, it would be something along those lines. My guess is that Austin Jackson is a guy they didn't think would be happy as a bench player or a fourth outfielder, which is right. Why I don't think that a ton of interest in him.
Shai, let's go back to this Blue Jay situation. For so long, many Blue Jay fans have felt the organization was hamstrung by the policy of not signing a free agent to longer than a 5-year deal. Do you believe that is now out the window, especially as everyone looks ahead to the David Price scenario down the road?
Potentially, but again, what is Mark Shapiro's philosophy going to be on that? And that I don't know.
Mm.
I've had people in the industry suggest to me that he doesn't believe in such policies because he sees it as an impediment to winning, and he's all about winning and things of that nature. So I think that's interesting. But ultimately, you know, there are a lot of unknowns here. You know, and I don't think we can necessarily look at the way he ran the Cleveland Indians and say, well, that's exactly how he's going to run the Blue Jays, because this is a different market. It's a different budget. And clearly he's got a different situation. And it's different as well, too, because – you know, a lot of times when you have a change in presidency, a change in GM, you're going into a situation where, you know, some things aren't very healthy and you've got some problems to fix. And, you know, you're probably going to be looking to make major substantive changes. He comes into a situation here where, you know, they really just have to keep the pedal to the metal in a lot of ways and continue building upon what is already established, provided he believes in the core that's in place. And at this point, I don't see how you could not. So for all those things, I think it's really too early to make to even speculate on where Shapiro is going to go with these things, because I really think there's a lot of fluidity, and there could also be I don't want to say a margins, but it could be a very different type of approach he takes to running the Blue Jays as to what he took to running the Cleveland Indians.
It's interesting because, you know, the Indians have the fifth lowest payroll in baseball, right, at $76 right. million. Dollars. The Blue Jays have spent $54 million more than Cleveland has this year. And Shapiro's quote today about just being a small market and the challenges that come with it, or a smaller market, he said the challenge is not to ever let that be an excuse.
Right.
The challenge is to create both a structure, a process for solving those challenges, and a group of people who don't readily fall back and rely on that as a reason why we can't win championships and be successful. It's a really interesting approach, Shai, from a dude who didn't have a lot of resources, just like Alex Anthopoulos didn't early on in his tenure, and now has, you know, the purse strings have opened up a little bit for him.
Sure. Well, I mean, ultimately, what money does is allows you the luxury to make a few more mistakes and at times to buy yourself out of those mistakes, mm-hmm. right? That, and the other thing, too, is that, you know, Cleveland had to be very aggressive. And this was something Shapiro did a lot in terms of signing young players early in their career to longer term contracts in order to fix their costs over an extended period. Now, something the Blue Jays have done at times, you know, most recently with Adam Lind and Ricky Romero, to varying degrees of success. He did it with Vernon Wells and Eric Hinsky years ago as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure necessarily things like that are good in this market or are even needed in this market, mm-hmm. because, again, the controlling the cost isn't going to be as crucial. So, you know, I think in general, the principle of being smart with your money, not letting, you know, making excuses for anything is a good one, and that's the way it should be. But if you're doing that with 120 as opposed to 80 million, right, then you certainly can do a lot more things. You have the power to retain players. You have the power to wait deeper into their careers to make sure they are what you think they are, and you can kind of have a lot more flexibility than what he had with Cleveland.
Mr. Davidi, we're going to let you scoot. Thanks so much for doing this.
You got it, fellas.
All righty. That is Shai Davidi. And we appreciate him joining us as we continue to discuss the whole Mark Shapiro
mm-hmm.
situation. It's interesting, I think, Shai's point about Shapiro and Alex Anthopoulos and how this is going to have to play out. I mean, I think we're getting the sense that there's a little element of uncertainty here.
But it would be under
that's what I was going to say.
This is not a Mark Shapiro, Alex Anthopoulos scenario.
Right.
It's if anybody is brought in to be the president of an organization with a pre-existing general manager and they don't have a working relationship, doesn't matter if it's what organization it is, sports or otherwise, mm-hmm. You know, people come in, they bring their own people often. Maybe Mark Shapiro looks at Alex Anthopoulos and sees him as an asset.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. As Shai also pointed out, it is interesting that Chris Antonetti had a certain amount of, relatively a lot of autonomy in his position as general manager of the Cleveland Indians, and that, in fact, the two of them, he and Shapiro, may have had some disagreements at time mm-hmm. as well. So, I mean, it's like anything else. We're going to have to wait, and and see, as I've been saying, how the jobs are delineated and where the dividing line is between Mark Shapiro's responsibilities and Alex's responsibilities. It is interesting. Alex has been very quiet today, which, you know, I don't know if we necessarily expected him to come out and you know, make any statement.
But, it's not his day today, right?
No, it's not. And I also, you know, perhaps with the rosters expanding, perhaps there's Alex is busy. Doing some work. I wanted to talk to you a little bit, Arash, because you, like me, have spent a lot of time around the country, living in different parts of the country, working in different parts of the country. And we talked to Brunt a little bit about this, and I talked to Beeston about this, but I want to kind of revisit it. And just, you know, I get the sense that the Blue Jays' national reach is we may even be underestimating it in Toronto.
I agree.
The TV ratings are through the roofs. We've already talked about that. The most watched shows on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday were Jays games. We've already discussed that. But where do you think that goes? You know, do you think we may be moving towards a point where perhaps this helps Montreal perhaps even get a baseball team? In other words, there's such a groundswell of support here that we may be seeing signs of that.
No, I don't. I don't think A has anything to do with B. And look, I'm a guy in his mid-30s whose birthday wasn't this week, Jeff, by the way. And I grew up, I was 12 and 13 years old when the Blue Jays were winning back-to-back World Series. I grew up in Nova Scotia. The Blue Jays were it. They were the number one team amongst so many people then because they were winning, because they were successful. Even some Expo fans, not a lot of them, but even some begrudgingly were on board for it too. But there was 6 or 7 NHL teams. It's just, it was the Blue Jays and that's it. What I've noticed now is a lot of my friends, a lot of people I hadn't heard from in quite some time who are now scattered all over Canada, it's like they're 12 and 13 and 14 and 15 years old again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exciting. I mean, friends of mine from my hometown of Truro, Nova Scotia, came into Toronto this weekend just for the Blue Jays. They want to kind of soak this up. They want to enjoy what they once had. The question is this sustainable beyond 2015 and beyond 2016?
Mm-hmm.
And while there may be a swell of support now, the question is, 2 years from now, Jeff, are we going to be back to a midweek series against the Cleveland Indians and 19,000 people showing up to the ballpark?
Yeah.
Well, we shall have to.
It's a bandwagon thing, right?
Sure. Absolutely. We'll have to wait and see. But I just, like I said, just anecdotally, I'm kind of interested in the amount of play this is getting across the country. We're going to be joined in a few minutes, by the way, by Clinton Portis, former NFL running back. And Don Banks is going to join us as well. I want to talk a little bit about the NFL now that we're getting to the end of the preseason. I want to focus on the whole situation in Washington with Robert Griffin III. Kirk Cousins will be the starting quarterback.
Yep.
But Jay Gruden just said a couple of hours ago that, and this is a quote, "I have nothing against Robert. I like Robert as a quarterback, no doubt about it. His future is with the Washington Redskins. The door is not shut on Robert Griffin." Well, I'll ask you, do you think it is?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
That's a remarkable fall from grace when you think of where that was a couple of years ago. That's remarkable.
And, I mean, we won't know this until either, one, Kirk Cousins completely stinks out the joint, or B, gets hurt, and the next man up, will that be Colt McCoy, who started a Monday Nighter last year and won?
Yeah.
Or is it RG3? And how much of this is a standoff between ownership and the football people in that building?
Well, this is now, according to several sources, there are high-ranking Redskins officials and coaches, specifically the head coach, who want to part ways with Griffin. Ownership is fighting them on it. There is some suggestion the Redskins have even had trade discussions about Griffin with teams.
But how do you move him?
How do you move him? I mean, he's got a $16.12 million option, right?
Mm-hmm.
Picked up for 2016. I mean, for the Redskins, it would count, if they were to release him, it would count $6.7 million in their salary cap.
Jeff, they traded 3 first-round picks for RG3.
Yeah.
3?
Yeah. And the thing is, we are joined right now by Clinton Portis, but I mean, the thing to keep in mind is that, I mean, this isn't on Jay Gruden's plate, the actual deal that got him here, is it? But it's on ownership's plate. Clinton Portis joins us. Clinton, thanks for doing this, man.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
You're on with Jeff Blair and Arash Madani. What do you make of the situation in Washington with RG3? We were just talking about this. Seems like a huge fall from grace for a guy who at one point was the next big thing.
It's definitely a huge fall, but I think when you look at this situation, they're making a decision that they feel is best for your team. And when you look at how this team rallied around Kirk Cousins compared to rallying around RG3, it's kind of night and day. You know, I think he lost the locker room, and a lot of the guys back and feel comfortable with Kurt. So, you know, I think it's a situation where you can see the progress in Kurt, you can see the progress in Colt, and it seems as if RG3 was at a standstill. You know, I think you want to believe in his growth, and, you know, it will be some of those mental lapses and back to the incorrect things that they were looking to improve on. So I think the RG3 era in Washington, D.C. could really be coming to a close, because if Kurt comes in and plays the way he's capable of playing, or this team rally around Kurt, how do you continue to put them in a situation of pinning them against each other? At some point, mm-hmm. you have to sever ties, and maybe this is a situation that's about to happen in D.C. at this moment.
But, Clinton, let me throw this scenario at you, because we were just talking about this before you came on. Tomorrow, Kirk turns an ankle. Week one, he gets blindsided and he's out. Is this Colt McCoy's team or is this RG3's team?
Well, we just had this same conversation. If tomorrow, if you're planning on moving on, yeah. and Kurt happens to go down or don't perform to where you want him to, is going back to RG3 going to make you better? How can you go back and ask him to step up or lead your team after stripping him of those duties prior to starting the season? You see what I'm saying? It's, if you're moving on and this is Kirk Cousins' team, it's impossible for RG3 to stay humble. And even if he's capable of being the number two guy, it's going to be really hard, because you're always a play away from having to go back and count on this man,
right.
when I think it's kind of a fallout at this point.
In conversation with Clinton Portis in Primetime Sports. Clinton, how much of this is a football thing? In other words, RG3 not the guy to play quarterback in the NFL for the Redskins right now? And how much of it is just, you know, there go the Redskins again. There's Daniel Snyder and, you know, screwing stuff up.
Well, I really don't think it has anything to do with Mr. Snyder. You know, I think if anything, Mr. Snyder has been the most patient and has the most belief in RG3. I think it's all football related, and I think that's where Mr. Snyder had to be removed, or he left it up to the rest of the organization and left it as being a football decision. Because if it's a football decision only, then you have to go with your best player. And this so far to this point, your best and most improved player this preseason has been Kirk Cousins in the quarterback, at the quarterback position. So I think it's all football related at this point. I don't think it's anything personal. I don't think it's anything that has to do with anything besides football. So I think it's all football related.
Clinton, you've been in that Redskins locker room. You know Daniel Snyder. You know the culture of that entire Washington organization, what goes on inside and outside of that building. When did things go wrong for RG3? Because it was a terrific rookie season. It was a charmed existence. He had everybody convinced he was going to take over not only that franchise, but the National Football League. When did it all fall apart?
Well, again, I think you're never as good as people say you are. When people give you praise, they blow it up. They exaggerate it. You're never as bad as people say you are. Because when they're talking bad and throwing you under, you would think you're the scum of the earth, when really you have to come to the realization that you are a professional football player, and it's rare that people get to this point. So, you know, people will build you down and they will tear you up.
Mm-hmm.
Build you up and tear you down. But when you look at this situation, I think it's been a long time coming. Mike Shanahan being fired. All of a sudden you come in with a new coach and Jay Gruden. You know, that was always a question mark, whether he was a Jay Gruden guy or if they got along. So it's a lot of stuff that we don't know. On the outside looking in, you can't really point at one situation and say, this is it. You know, I think a lot was made of him saying he was a better quarterback. I think, you know, a lot was made of his injury, whether it was really an injury, when did it happen. You know, it was so much surrounding. I think at this point, it's so many bright spots within this organization. When you look at the defensive side of the ball, you look at Keenan Robinson and Kerrigan. You look at the offensive side of the ball, you have Alfred Morris, who's the second-leading rusher since entering the NFL. Yeah. You look at Matt Jones coming in as a third-round pick in the spark plug he's been. You look at Jameson Crowder making plays in his first preseason action. All of a sudden, you know, so many guys have stepped up and made plays. Andre Roberts has had a spectacular preseason with his back up against the wall. So you look at so many guys that's positive storylines, and this organization is dominated by negativity in the RG3 storyline. So I think it's just a matter of moving on from that situation and really allowing the young guys to develop and somebody to be the face of this organization. Having Kerrigan, signing Trent Williams to a long-term deal. You have so many positive storylines, and it's constantly dominated by negativity, whether it's the name change or RG3 situation. So I think it's a lot to do with both of those.
Clinton, before we let you run, where can RG3 play? I mean, you've been around the game. Is this guy just not going to be able to play quarterback in the NFL because he's going to be hurt all the time? Or is there a team or a situation that you sit back and go, yeah, boy, that would be a great situation for RG3?
Any team that's willing to play RG3 style of football, if you look back over the time period of African-American quarterbacks, you look at, you know, just to go of recent, to start with Michael Vick in Atlanta, when he was one of the most dynamic players in the NFL because he had so much range within the playbook to make plays, and they were all untimed plays being made, but spectacular highlights, spectacular runs, and all of a sudden that changed. You know, you thought Michael Vick was in the perfect system with the Philadelphia Eagles, and it didn't work out, you know. So it's really about being in a situation where people buy into you. And I think just with this organization in this area and this media, for RG3, it's kind of hard to come back to fan favorite, or, you know, it's kind of like a separation. Like the Redskins are losing fans, and RG3, so many people believe in RG3 or feel like he was just in the wrong organization. So it's so much to go along with a small storyline. So you have to find an organization that's willing to develop this man or play his style of football, to put him in the system that he had with Art Browse, his coach at Baylor. To be in that type of system, I think you've seen the Shanahans change their style of play to adopt to him in the first year, and that's why he was so successful. But if you're trying to change him from being the quarterback that made him such a successful or household name, then it's hard because he's not your pocket passer. He's not your Peyton Manning or Tom Brady type of quarterback that sits in the pocket, no running outside, buy time, step up, climb the ladder, make 1, 2, 3, 4 reads in their progression and buy the time to get open. So he's not that quarterback. And if you're going to make him that quarterback or change his style of play, it's going to really be hard. But if you have a system, look at the Tennessee Titans, you know, Mariota, similar quarterback, you know, more accuracy, but why not bring him in? That's the same style of offense that they're going to be running. So I'm not sure who their backup quarterback is, but, you know, you got to find the right fit. You know, you would love to be in Seattle, or, you know, you look at San Fran with Kaepernick. You have to find similar situations where teams don't have to go out and change their entire offense to accommodate your style of play.
Clinton, thank you so much for doing this today. Really appreciate it, man. You be well.
No problem. Y'all take care.
It's Clinton Portis.
Very insightful stuff.
Well, he was played for the Redskins, knows Mike Shanahan.
From his Denver days.
From his Denver days as well. And I think a lot of people thought that his career would be kickstarted with Shanahan in Washington. But, yeah, it's not the answers we expected. I don't know. I think we expected a guy coming in and ripping the hell out of Daniel Snyder and standing up for RG3. You don't get that.
Portis says this is a football decision.
Fascinating discussion. We'll ask Don Banks of SI whether or not it's a football decision. Don Banks joins us when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Now more great sports talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Primetime for Monday, August 31st. We're just half an hour away from Jays Indians baseball and Sportsnet 590 Defense, Sportsnet East Ontario, West and Pacific. Want to continue our discussion on RG3 and the Washington Redskins. Just heard from Clinton Portis a couple of minutes ago about his take on the situation. Want now to bring in Don Banks of SI, one of our regulars. Hello, Mr. Banks.
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm almost curious to know what Clinton had to say.
Give me the nutshell. Given in a nutshell, surprisingly, he didn't say that Dan Snyder was a complete and total moron. He said he viewed it as a football decision. And essentially that his take is that RG3 had lost the dressing room. And essentially what he said is it made sense to him. There you go. Which, let me throw that over to you. Is that what you're hearing?
And Don, he also said that the RG3 era is effectively over.
Yes, he said that.
Yeah, no, I was going to start there. We did a kind of a roundtable exercise today on SI.com, and I wrote effectively that. I don't think there's any genie going back into a bottle at this point for him. This is kind of the second time Jay Gruden has signaled as a head coach that he didn't think he was the best quarterback on the roster. To the eyeball test, guys, that's been obvious this preseason. The hope was that you could add the caveat that the preseason means little or nothing, and in most cases it does, but I think there are some cases where the preseason eyeball test matters a lot, and I think from a standpoint of seeing Griffin look comfortable and in command of Gruden's offense, we never remotely saw it, and he did not look like he was, you know, taking that step that all offseason seemed to be talked about and aimed for in year two of Gruden's offense. And I think the concussion issue last week simply opened the door for Gruden to make this move today.
Don, so now it's Cousins' team. Does this mean that RG3 is now number three? Is RG3 on the depth chart now?
I think it's possible. You know, Gruden wouldn't go there because he doesn't want to humiliate anybody, but I think it could very well be McCoy could be two and Griffin three. But look, guys, remember, they all played last year. They
sure
all started.
They,
they all weren't, you know, benched per se. This doesn't mean, as much as Gruden wants to come out and say it's Cousins, what he means is it's Cousins' job at the moment until injury or ineffectiveness changes the scenario. And with losing teams, what usually happens? Injury or ineffectiveness usually changes the scenario.
Especially in the NFC East.
All I'm saying is I don't think Griffin can go back to starter and then succeed in Washington. I think that chapter closed today.
Don, is there a place he could go and be happy and be the starter? Does that place even exist for RG3 right now?
Not right now, no. I think he'd have to go somewhere as a two, as a backup, with maybe a chance to compete. But I think ideally where he goes is, you know, to the right coach, to the right system. You know, I'm not saying these teams as a starting option, but you look at a Seattle, you look at a San Francisco, you look at a Philadelphia.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to say that.
Yep.
Yeah, those are coaches that would, you know, kind of welcome that dual threat type of quarterback that have played and won, and obviously with Russell Wilson and Kaepernick and Chip Kelly's experience with that type of quarterback, the best case scenario to me is he goes somewhere where he's kind of out of the spotlight in 2015, but he's doing a version of what Michael Vick did by going away to Leavenworth for 2 years in a dogfighting scandal. I'm not equating anything here. I'm just saying for Vick, he came back very quietly to Philadelphia on the football playing sense, and kind of rehabilitated his career very incrementally. And it was a quiet 09 while he was behind McNabb, and then it was his turn in 10. And I just think in a lot of ways what has to happen if Griffin is to get a legitimate second shot to be a starter in this league, it's got to now be kind of a rung at a time somewhere.
Don, there was a report this weekend that the football side of the building wanted to part ways with RG3, but that ownership stepped in. Mike Shanahan lost that battle ultimately, and you know they parted ways with Shanahan even though he was owed a ton of money. What has happened that now Dan Snyder has relented to his football people that, okay, we're moving on?
Well, time, for one, and lack of success. That's a great motivator, even for Daniel Snyder. Two, he hired Scott McLuhan as GM. He's a legitimate GM. He's not Bruce Allen in a figurehead role as GM. If you're going to have a legitimate GM, and Washington finally came around to the realization that maybe they needed one after that long run of, you know, dysfunction that hasn't ended, then you got to listen to him and you got to empower him. And I think what he's done is basically say, okay, this isn't year two like Shanahan fighting Griffin. This is year four, and we haven't had the results, and it's not 2012, and we're probably not going back to 2012. And I now have a football personnel staff that is telling me it's not there for the young man in this system. So you either have to fire the coach and the GM, or you have to move on from Robert Griffin. And I don't think he wanted to do that by a long shot, meaning Daniel Snyder, but I think he's resigned to it.
Let's bring it back a little close to home. The Buffalo Bills have announced that Tyrod Taylor will be the starting quarterback. Any surprise there at all, or did this become apparent to you as the exhibition season went on?
Going through Buffalo just the night of their preseason opener and talking to people, I wrote that it's very apparent to me they want Tyrod Taylor to win this job, and unless he completely kind of drops the ball, he was going to. I think they just see his upside and his athleticism as, you know, potentially giving defenses much more trouble. Now, the risk factor is you're going to start a guy who's never started an NFL game, and you have a very small body of work of watching him. And so they're talking very confidently, but we'll find out in the first couple weeks of the season. Because they talked confidently once upon a time in Buffalo that E.J. Manuel was going to be up to it, and he wasn't. And they had to go get Kyle Orton last year. So I'm not surprised, because I think they just say, we like Matt Castle, but here's his upside, and here's where it ends, and we know what we have there. We're going to roll the dice. Apologize for my dog.
It's okay.
We're going to roll the dice on the bigger upside and find out if Tyrod Taylor has a little magic in him, as Rex Ryan likes to say.
Well, there's no reason your dog barked as soon as you said roll the dice, was it?
I think so, yeah. The dog loves Vegas. So maybe he thought we were going.
And, Don, when you look, I mean, Greg Roman comes over as the offensive coordinator. The San Francisco 49ers rolled the dice. They moved away from Alex Smith for Colin Kaepernick. Greg Roman's not the offensive coordinator in Buffalo.
That's a great point. I think that's Greg Roman has seen this roll of the dice work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No dog bark there, though.
No. I got out of the living room. Nice. That helped.
So with Roman in charge of this offense now, Don, you know, everything that, you know, we look at, you look a little bit back to Baltimore, but ultimately to the San Francisco situation, they've upgraded significantly across the board. With Tyrod Taylor there, if Shady McCoy is going to be healthy, if Percy Harvin's hip is ever going to come around, what do you foresee for this offense?
I think best case scenario, it's a kind of offense that can stay in games. It's going to win its share if the defense and the running game really is exactly what the Bills hope. Mm. But I don't see it as an explosive offense week in and week out. I think it will have some Sundays or some Mondays or some Thursdays that look that way. I'm picking them to finally end the playoff drought, to get a wild card, to squeak out enough wins, be that 9 or 10, you know, to do a, have a strong second place. But I think they're they're taking a gamble here. I think Castle was the safe choice, but they're saying, look, let's try this. And again, guys, what they do now, and no matter what they say about 2015, it's a week-by-week referendum.
Of course.
We could be having this conversation in 3 weeks, and it was, guys, what happened with Tyrod Taylor and his brief two-week starting stint, and what does Matt Castle give them? It's just, that's the state of the NFL. There are 9 teams that are going to start quarterbacks. And I'm going to write about this in the morning. 9 teams are going to start quarterbacks that really, at the end of last year, were not their team's starters. Hmm. And those 9 teams are all, right now, hoping for the best and looking at the best-case scenario. But promise you, they will not all get it.
Don, I'm a big NFL draft junkie, as so many others are. The news has just come from your pal Bill Williamson over at ESPN that the Raiders have cut Trent Richardson, which now means that 2 of the top 3 picks from that 2012 draft of Robert Griffin, Trent Richardson, are effectively out the door.
Yeah.
And Andrew Luck remains the prize from those sweepstakes. Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but it isn't. I mean, I in some ways, I guess everything past Jamarcus Russell hasn't been too much of a surprise, especially in Oakland. But no, I mean, I can't explain to you why Trent Richardson was so well thought of and then has been such a spectacular failure.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not an oversight at this point. This is 3 teams getting to eyeball him up close and passing judgment on him. And each one of them thought, I'm not sure what I ever saw on him once they got to look at him. He doesn't run hard. He seemingly attracts tacklers almost upon receiving the ball. His average is minuscule, and it's not there. And I don't know why some guys are superstars in college and hit the league and don't just turn into average players, but really just bust. And yet this one, seemingly since the minute the Browns traded him,
and got a first-round pick for him.
Yeah, I know. Remarkable.
Remarkable.
We don't think of the Browns as doing anything right, but they got that one right.
Yeah, and then they fired Lombardi, who made the deal, so go figure.
Good point.
Yeah.
Mr. Banks, we're going to let you scoot. Thank you.
All right. Stop. I will isolate my dog from
forward. Go roll some dice. I thought that was great timing.
She's a very good guard dog. Somebody must have passed by our front door or something. So we'll see you guys.
Take care. That's Don Banks of SI.com. Okay. Trent Richardson. I just put them 3 magic word letters down there.
I actually got my hands on a confidential CFL negotiation list recently. Trent Richardson's name is not on that list. But Justin Blackman's is. Yes, it was the number 5 pick of that now infamous 2012 NFL draft. He's suspended indefinitely. So, Jeff, top 5 picks of that draft, 3 complete busts.
Well, what do they say? The more and more you see the NFL draft, there'll be a lot of your good work's done bottom of the first round, second round.
Yeah.
RG3, though, I still find that. I don't know where that goes. I don't know where that goes. This guy, I mean, the guy's too good to be.
The amazing part, and I mean, this would just be so delicious an irony, is if he ends up in St. Louis. You know, the Rams get 3 ones for him, and then he ends up becoming Jeff Fisher's starting quarterback.
That'd be awesome. Somebody has to take a shot at this guy at some point.
Oh, at some point they will.
Mr. Badani, thanks for doing this. You're back manana, right?
Yes, sir.
All righty, we'll celebrate your birthday tomorrow. Sorry about that. For Rash Madani, I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks so much for joining us on Primetime Sports. We are the nation's number 1 most watched and listened to sports talk show presentation. I haven't said that for a while. Jays baseball is next, everybody. Jays and Indians, 1-3 on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet East Ontario, West Pacific. Have a great night.